This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, today, Chuck Willer did a phone interview with him a couple weeks ago on Coast Range Association's Green New Deal proposal. What it says in one paragraph here is, to accomplish the Green New Deal's goals, we propose two initiatives: land reform through the buyout of most industrial forest owners, and the transfer of purchased lands to locally owned and operated social benefit enterprise. So that's the Coast Range Association's Green New Deal proposal that Chuck Willer is going to talk to you about. I'm doing the sustainability certificates series, so you'll be hearing from about that. That I've got several interviews scheduled for that. I just went to the Springfield City Council meeting, and what they want to do is have an ordinance that makes it illegal to do public drug use. We have a measure 110 here in Oregon that apparently lowers the fines for drug use to just fines instead of jail time. So what the fear of the Springfield City Council is that this would make it easier for people to do drugs in the open. So they want to make it just like open container for alcohol. What I asked when I was there is if they could find a restorative justice solution for it and offer mental health services instead of fines or jail time to people. And I don't know if they did this because of that, but they asked the city attorney to research the impact of this policy on city services, both nonprofit and government services, because it's going to impact fire and police and all the services, including the park service, and they included Willamette Lane, the Springfield Park Service, that they need to have the city attorney research the impact of the policy of making open-air drug use illegal. And so what they're looking at is people that are using needles, but marijuana use also would be just like an open container with alcohol. So, you'll be hearing about that in the future here too. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. All right, so I'm talking with Chuck Willer of the Coast Range Radio, Coast Range Association, and Coast Range Radio. Can you tell me a little bit about the Coast Range Association and what they do?
Well, we're a nonprofit that's been around for 33 years. We do forest advocacy, basically, federal lands advocacy relative to the Northwest Forest Plan. We do private lands advocacy for good forest management. Our focus there is addressing large industrial ownerships, particularly those large industrial ownerships that are owned by Wall Street money. So that's basically what we do. Over the years, we've heavily supported and been involved in watershed protection and watershed issues, which are intimately linked, of course, to forest management.
All right, and so you have a plan that goes with the Green New Deal, a proposal for the Green New Deal. You want to describe that?
2020, at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, we came out with a proposal applying House Resolution 109, which at the time was the Green New Deal that Senator Merkley was supporting. And we applied the criteria and the perspective of that those resolutions in Congress to industrial forest land, which emphasized a just transition for a climate approach to forest land, which, of course, would be building up the carbon on the forest estate. And that report came out in 2020, Green New Deal for Industrial Forest Lands. It's available on the Coast Range website. And we followed up that report this year in May with a new report addressing financial forest owners, Wall Street money forest owners, about where the money goes when timber is harvested and sold on industrial forest lands. And we asked two questions that haven't really been explored before. We asked the question, where does the money actually go? How much of it goes locally to, let's say, a logger's paycheck? And how much of it goes somewhere else out of the local area? And then we asked, in terms of who gets the money, where are they in terms of wealth? Does the money go to the one richest 1%, the richest 10%, the bottom 50%? And that report complements our Green New Deal proposal. And that proposal had two things that hadn't been proposed before itself, which was the call for land reform, which was changing the ownership from Wall Street forest investor ownership to some social benefit form of ownership. Might be a co-op, might be a nonprofit, might be a municipal government. And then having the management be mandated to build up carbon. And so the land reform and social benefit ownership are the two things we argued for in the 2020 Green New Deal proposal. And I think they're both documents, the document from May of this year and the Green New Deal proposal, particularly that one, have stood the test of time and are completely relevant today.
All right, and so do you want to, let's elaborate a little bit on how the co-op idea would work. So it'd be similar to a credit union where the people that are most affected by the forest, but the people that use the forest the most, the citizens would be in charge of the forest. Is that correct?
Well, how exactly the nonprofit corporation is set up, it could be set up any number of ways. It could be, you know, electric co-ops are set up in such a way that the owners are the people who buy electricity from the co-op. A forest co-op could be a set of owners that exist locally to the forest. It could be some other arrangement. It could be also involve the workers of the forest as part of the ownership of the co-op. So it could be set up, I think, for equity being spread amongst a group of people that receive the benefits from the forest. Now, we don't prescribe how the forest should be managed outside of the funding mechanism being a federal grant, because only the federal government can finance a Green New Deal transition. And that federal grant would come with a singular encumbrance on the deeds of all the parcels that make up the ownership. And that encumbrance is an easement that mandates the buildup of forest carbon. So that's the constraint on management. Within that constraint that you build up forest carbon, people can discuss, argue, and vote on the way they want the forest managed. And that's how we proposed it. There are people in the big city and people in the conservation movement that are suspect to allow rural people to do things they don't like. And but as things stand now, for example, the use of herbicides or pesticides on the forest is a controversial thing locally. As things stand now, with state preemption, no local body or no local group of people can assert their will and ban herbicide spraying from helicopters. Well, I don't know why, on the one hand, the big city liberals can say, you know, we're a little bit worried about how the company would be managed with the good old boys running it. That's the way they frame it. And at the same time, insist on preemption where the state is compromised by huge multinational corporations that allow herbicides to be sprayed out of helicopters everywhere. So there has to be some kind of consistency here. And I trust the local decisions on many things over state preemption and what will come out of Salem. So that's where we came down on management in that way. And once you get into the constraint of building up forest carbon, you know, things are going to generally go right. Just as investors constrain forest companies today with return on equity demands. So the forest is always constrained by something when you have capital invested.
It's just that Weyerhaeuser, according to Weyerhaeuser's site, what they want to do is sequester carbon in building materials. So that would mean they want to do young growth. They just want to have tree farms. They and sequester carbon in by harvesting, you know, 40-year-old growth over and over again and replanting and monocropping. So I'm not sure that – and so that would sequester carbon like you're mandating.
Yeah, well, Weyerhaeuser says the industry, not just Weyerhaeuser, the industry says they're going to sequester carbon through – the use of forest trees in long-lived forest products. The numbers don't really pencil out that they're sequestering much carbon. You know, the amount of carbon that gets used up in logging, diesel fuel use, kiln drying the lumber at the lumber mill, which is run by natural gas, in the kilns, often it could be cogeneration heat too. The carbon that's used just in logging and lumber making, and then the loss of carbon through slash and all kinds of other stuff that is not utilized in the process, and the fact that much of what comes out of a lumber mill doesn't last very long. Yeah, I mean, you're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and then it deteriorates and becomes atmospheric carbon. So the industry has its story. There's other experts that are on climate and carbon that refute the industry's story. That's not my job. We just note that or reference it.
But that's what I mean. Big Timber is going to try to stop local, if a local organization says, no, you can't clear cut because that is not managing the forest for carbon, they are going to refute that with high powered lawyers. You don't see that happening?
Power is what they use in the incessant television commercials that are shown on the media, showing blue sky situation on the forest. There's nothing I can do about that. It's a manufactured image that doesn't correspond to reality. in so many ways. And the fact of the matter is, the industry can say all it wants, all over the place, petrochemical industry, the car forest industry, all kinds of industry can say whatever it wants. Things are getting worse. We're going in a direction. And the climate crisis will increasingly happen until we get serious about dealing with these sources of carbon. Get serious about sequestering the too much carbon already in the atmosphere.
All right, and I'm not against your idea. I'm just trying to play a little devil's advocate here. So let's say a city, clear-cutting affects the water quality of cities that are downstream from the clear-cut. So how would a city, if there was a co-op that owned the forest, that owned the private forest lands, how would a city stop them from clear-cutting based on water quality?
You'd have much better water quality under a carbon buildup regime. The focus is not clear-cutting. Again, we don't prescribe the management in our proposal. It's the intensity of the management, the frequency of the management. If you had a clear-cut once every 300 years, no one would be complaining about clear-cutting. We need to move away from clear-cutting to different kinds of harvest strategies. But we don't go deeply into that. It's just that you cannot build up carbon over the next 20, 30, 40 years without a less intensive management that allows the forest to grow larger. Over time, you actually will recover the lost production the current short rotations are losing. So the timber industry does not manage for maximum production. The timber industry does not manage for maximum profit. The timber industry manages their capital, the forest, for maximum return. And that, you got to understand that. And so a lot of profit and a lot of production is lost under Wall Street ownership and the mandate of high return on capital.
Well, so these co-ops, the co-op ownership would actually be a more efficient way of managing the forest.
Well, efficiency could be a word to use. I would say you could certainly do it in a more natural way. Nature doesn't play to efficiency, nature plays to redundancy. And that's the problem with Wall Street money wanting a high return, is that they end up simplifying the forest and making it not, actually, they make it very efficient. You just grow one species, you grow it fast, you cut it quick. You know, nature's more redundant, isn't worried about speed or anything. It's worried about survival and growth. And that's what nature does. And a forestry that would build up carbon would be much closer to a redundant natural forest. Not there. It wouldn't be the same as a natural forest, but it sure wouldn't be an industrial return on equity Wall Street forest, which is the problem we face today.
All right, so let's get into the details of that. So private equity, so the forest, there is public lands, and then there are lands that are owned by timber companies, and the timber companies have consolidated ownership to a smaller number of larger timber companies. And now private investors are buying the land from these timber companies. Is that correct? So what is the difference? How is it managed differently from a timber company to a real estate investment company?
Here's what I think is the way to say it. There's been a consolidation in the industrial large timber company world. So instead of 50 players, you now have basically 10, 15 major players that own 80% of the forest, private forest in the high-growing counties. Those companies have transitioned from integrated firms with lumber mills to standalone forests, many of which are real, many of the acres, or most of the acres, are managed under the ownership of a real estate investment trust. And the reason they transitioned to real estate investment trust standalone is that they are federally tax exempt if they return 90% of their profit to the investor owners each year. Now, there's an argument there that when companies pay income tax and then issue the dividends to shareholders, and the shareholders pay income tax, it's double taxation. I don't agree with that. It's not, that's really not what's happening, but that's the industry story, and a lot of politicians with weak minds will fall for that. But in any case, one of the things that has happened, not only just consolidation into a few companies, but since 1960, 700,000 acres of small woodland owner land has been bought out and converted to industrial land in Western Oregon. So you, every time a mom and pop landowner gets bought out, or sells out, and they leave, that's one less customer at the local grocery store. And that's why a lot of the rural landscape is basically depopulated. As the small landowners have left and bought out, as economic policy no longer supports so-called inefficient small business, and we have a population study in our new report that came out in May that shows the dramatic nature of rural depopulation. And I would urge everyone to take a look at our population analysis. And it's not just Western Oregon because of the timber industry. It's all over the country, this rural depopulation. And it's just, there's various reasons in various areas. So it's a complex situation out there, and behind, you know, behind all these phenomena that hurt people, that cause people to migrate, that cause, you know, small towns to dry up and blow away, behind all that phenomena, you always can dig down and find Wall Street money churning and changing the whole economy and the nature of the social structure. And that's what we've done with our forest analysis, is we've dug down and we understand what's animating all this change, which for most part, I think, is negative.
All right, but can you just give a briefly, how was timber managed in the older days, in the 60s and 70s, when you had smaller timber companies, and you know, like Ken Kesey's Sometimes a Great Notion, the family in that book, how did they manage the timber differently than a real estate investment trust?
Well, you have at least three phases of the timber industry in Oregon. You have the first phase, which is timber companies acquiring virgin forest, so to speak, clear cutting it, and abandoning the land and moving on. And that era produced, particularly during the Depression, they were not only abandoning what had been cut, they were abandoning standing, huge standing stocks of forest, because there was no money to be made. There was so much timber, the markets were flooded, the price was zip. Then the bigger industrial players in that era decided to start the tree farm movement, which was, we'll no longer cut virgin timber because it's going to be gone. companies, Crown Zeller back, Georgia Pacific, whatever, owned the majority of the forest land. There were still a lot of small landowners, but owned the majority of it. And they started the tree farm movement and the plantations and genetically selected stock. And then you come to the 80s, and there's certain problems that are showing up, like disease, twist needle cast. And they're coping with it, but they catch on. Plum Creek manages to become a real estate investment trust as a working forest entity across millions of acres of the West. And the IRS goes along with it. Now, the reason the IRS and the federal government went along with Plum Creek becoming a real estate investment trust is because it fit into the general bend over backwards and give tax breaks to the rich folk agenda started under Reagan and then Bush and then Clinton. That whole neoliberal era of do whatever you can to help the rich folk make money under the fantastic belief that they'll take that money and reinvest it in our country and will grow bigger and better, which is a crazy belief and not supported by the evidence. But what happened was that the rich got a lot richer, and once Plum Creek had converted, a lot of other companies, particularly Weyerhaeuser, went about the business to convert into a real estate investment trust, which federal law only allows 25% of the assets to be in non-forest. So Weyerhaeuser had to sell a lot of assets to become a real estate investment trust, and that's why they sold their paper mills and stuff like that.
All right, and so
today we end up basically they're all real. You know, the majority is real estate investment trusts or integrated companies selling off property to be managed under real estate investment trusts. So everyone can avoid federal taxes, corporate taxes, and then the dividends are generally treated as capital gains and not income anyway.
All right, so the issue is not how so much as how the forest is managed by real estate investments trust. It's where the money goes. The money is extracted out of the local economy and basically sent straight into the 1%. I understand that, but are they also managing the forest differently? In other words, are they planting trees at all, or are they just going to cut trees, the real estate investment trust?
For a continuous production of timber, which they cut, they replant. The forest is fully regulated, so if they've got, 100,000-acre forest, they're cutting 2.5% a year. And, the next year they cut 2.5%, the next year, and so the whole forest is stair-stepped in age classes. And they keep it going. So there's, is that sustainable? The spray, the fast growing. I mean, these forests that are plantations, they're only growing because they're dumping nitrogen pellets across the landscape. It's a petrochemical driven agriculture, just like farming. And is it sustainable? I doubt it. An experiment in something.
Well, so basically, it's a giant lawn. They've created a giant lawn that does not create habitat for. It only creates habitat for a few limited species, and basically, there's no canopy to prevent heat from rising into the atmosphere and things like that.
Well, there's a lot of problems with the plantation landscape. Fire, their susceptibility to fire, susceptibility to drought, the lack of moisture intercept and creating fog drip in the coastal zone. Yeah, it's a real problem as we go into a warmer and warmer world, I can see why the local owners of our forest, the families, sold out to big money. I think they kind of saw the writing on the wall. The big money players that are buying these forests, you know, that's not their money. They're just the players. It's somebody else's money. And, you know, most of the wealth, the equity, is not just owned by the 1%. It's the top 10% in the United States, richest households, that own 90% of equity. And so, you know, the rest, the other 90% of the people, the 40%, the next 40%, these are the typical breakouts that the federal government does for income. You know, they have a fair amount of equity, but it's mostly tied up in their homes. It's the 9% and the 1% and the 0.1% that owns equity in such large amounts that they have money to then deploy as investors. And they're the ones that are creating pools that are buying homes on your block. They're the ones creating pools of money to buy into health care. They're the ones that are creating pools of money to loan to college students for his college debt. It's the top 1%, the top 0.1%, and then the 9% richest. That's the group that runs the show. It's the group that defines the two political parties. And it's the group of people that manufacture consent and the illusions that advertising sells the culture.
All right, so let's get into Weyerhaeuser's site claims that all these practices are sustainable, and they have a certificate of sustainability from the Forest Sustainability Initiative that is monitored by a group of industry professionals and environmentalists that say that their practices are sustainable. If these certificates, don't they encourage people to invest in forest with false information, where they could be sending that money to other appropriate technology if those sustainability certificates were accurate?
If you're an investor of serious money, let's say you're a foundation.
Right, institutional investor, yeah.
Well, a big investor, and you're doing your due diligence, you should know that SFI is not a credible certification program, and that Weyerhaeuser's representation that they're SFI certified is not a credible basis to now sell people an investment fund. So you got to do your homework, and these investment outfits that are soliciting money from the rich folk, and there's a lot of rich folk that have a conscience, and they don't want to invest in oil and gas, and they don't want to invest in bad stuff. If you haven't done the proper due diligence, yeah, you could probably solicit somebody buying Weyerhaeuser stock. You could just buy Weyerhaeuser stock. And maybe if you haven't done your homework, you know, it doesn't matter what Weyerhaeuser says. You know, every business in the market says stuff. You have to go to an independent, you have to do your homework and independently verify the representations of any business. I mean, that's why there's a magazine called Consumer Reports that actually tests products. Because who believes a company's representation about their product?
All right, but so...
SFI, it's not independent. It's not like Consumer Reports. It's not an independent entity.
All right, so there was a boycott. The reason we have these forest certificates was in the 90s, they were cutting old-growth forests, and those were showing up in the wood that you bought at Home Depot. So there was a Home Depot boycott. What about the consumer? These certificates are also not giving the consumer proper information and are allowing basically Walmart to, or Home Depot and Walmart and all the big box stores basically to sell products that are not sourced ethically. So doesn't the consumer have a role in stopping the forest from being cut improperly?
You're asking a very deep question of social governance and responsibility. My belief is that, if we had a better democracy and people were able to express themselves adequately in the government, it would be the government's job to ensure marketplace truth. As things stand today in the United States, democracy is pretty tattered. Big money runs the show, and truth in the marketplace is hard to come by. Do I expect consumers to smoke out every business that's making false representations? No. That's why we have government. But it's hard to get the government to do the right thing when big money is running rampant in society. And the Supreme Court's decisions on campaign donations and all kinds of big money issues have really made things a sorry state of affairs. And that's not to mention the whole fact of the matter that we were the first country out of the chutes in terms of a so-called democratic government. And it's not very well done compared to more modern governments that have parliamentary democracies. So the whole idea of the Senate being a place for the landed gentry to exercise veto power in the states is all very real. We have half, 40% of the Senate representing hardly any people. They represent empty acres. Bunch of old guys operating on behalf of a few empty acre states. We've got major problems in this country. And so, I don't expect consumers to figure everything out. I expect good, proper governance.
Well, but the point I'm making is the government does not enforce the information, accurate information rules. And so the consumer is not given accurate information. The only thing that the boycott in the 90s worked, and they stopped using old growth lumber in Home Depot. So consumer boycotts are the only thing that I've seen really work, is ultimately if the consumer decides not to do something, the consumer is not informed properly.
I don't disagree that on certain issues like old growth, you can mobilize a big enough block of consumers to change business behavior, okay? As far as something as vague as sustainably grown trees, it's hard to mobilize a block of people to parse the difference between SFI and SSC or some credible sustainability thing. It's easier to educate people to big old growth tree, bad, cut. Other China tree, okay, cut. But I'll point out, a lot of the old growth that no longer is sold at the Home Depot is not because the consumer was boycotted. It's because the Northwest Forest Plan shut down old growth cutting. And that's an example of the government doing right after a huge movement for 20 years to get proper management on the Northwest Forest, old growth forest. And that's how Coast Range started. We were part of that movement. What I remember, it was the lawsuit that shut down the Mapleton Ranger District in the 80s and the lawsuits that shut down the National Forest was the crisis that produced the Northwest Forest Plan, because the Endangered Species Act, the species that needed old growth forest did not have old growth in sufficient quantity, and it was going to be increasingly cut. That's what was driving the whole political situation in the late 80s and early 90s, was the federal lawsuit.
I just think if you look at that, those 10 points that Weyerhaeuser has, if the public saw that I agree with you, I hear what you're saying, that it's a esoteric concept, the sustainability, but if they saw that they are actually advocating clear cutting as a environmental practice, that people would be outraged and force the government to do something about it.
I agree. You're right.
Through purchasing it, and Home Depot would be a keystone in that to popularize it.
If we could adequately communicate to people that clear cutting continues to this day, that PIAA, which owns industrial forest in Clatsop County and is made up of a lot of professors' retirement funds, is clear cutting. And that the forest looks like Swiss cheese. And TIAA, the Nuveen capital management arm of that FTIAA, is not managing any differently. They have a much better PR agenda. So, yeah, clear cutting. Intensively managed clear cutting that's cutting a sizable percentage of the forest, replanting, spraying, the whole shoot and match is terrible. It's terrible for the streams. It's terrible for the wildlife and the critters, the insects, the birds. It's terrible. It's not sustainable. I don't care if they have SFI certification or not. The investors should realize what's going on and get their money out and leave. We should reset the forest on not chasing return on capital, but doing right by the forest and doing right by the local people. Saying that for 20 years.
Yeah, but how do we do it is the question. And I'm just saying the Home Depot, it would be a keystone in getting all that information out and making a change, maybe. And that's only just my opinion.
Well, I respect opinion, and how we do it is the question of the day, because doing it is part of the solution to the climate crisis. And whereas the loss of species and other slow rolling things could go on forever, this climate crisis is going to demand that people insist on a solution. And when the solution has to be found, there's only so many ways to sequester, get that excess carbon out of the atmosphere. The billionaires think they're going to build machines to do it. The billionaires are nuts. And when their machines fail, I think some of the billionaires think they're going to Mars. Well, they're nuts too. We've got to build forests back up. We've got to change agriculture, and we have to do things in a very quick way, not market-based solutions, selling credits and this nonsense to investors to build the forest up, and all these schemes will be dead before market-based solutions work. We've got to get going with the Green New Deal and transform the productive basis of this society and have a just transition, and we better start today.
Yeah, it just reminds me of the scene in Total Recall where they're in the dome and they control the air in the dome, and anytime they want, they can just shut the air off. You know, you can't have a machine to fix the atmosphere because they can shut it off anytime they want. You can't control something like that. All right, so Chuck Willer of Coast Range Association. Anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
Of issues to, you know, convey to the public. I work on it all the time, and it's so important that we speak to this forest condition, forest management, and climate, the nexus of all these three things that, I just thank you for having me on and allowing me to share some views that have been 25, 30 years in the making.
All right, Chuck Willer of the Coast Range Association, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.